You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm here today with another edition of our show. And today we're going to be joined by Sven Longshanks to talk about things that affect both sides of the Anglosphere across the Atlantic from one another, about nationalist growth and where we're building to. And it's very exciting. But I want to take the first second of our show to pay tribute. Yesterday was the three-year anniversary of the assassination of two of our Golden Dawn comrades. Were murdered by far-left radicals outside of one of the offices of Golden Dawn. They were murdered 3 years ago, and you know, I think it's so important for us to remember that as nationalists, that we have so many martyrs, those who have given their lives, those who have been falsely imprisoned, those who sacrifice for the cause of faith and family and folk, and I think it's so important for us to be able to honor them, remember them, to ensure that they shall live forever in our memories, forever in our hearts, and we shall be able to accomplish the victory that their blood was shed for. So remember them, remember all of our fallen martyrs and our comrades, and now on to the full edition of our show. Sven, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing well, Matt. I had a really good weekend. I went to the Southwest Forum. These are forums that are put on by Jez Turner from the London Forum, which probably all our listeners are aware of. That started a couple of years ago, but since then it's really taken off, and there are forums that are taking that are beginning all over the country. Really, there's been a Scottish forum, there's been a Welsh forum, there's the Yorkshire forum, which meets regularly every 2 months, and this was the first Southwest forum, which was in a pretty central location. It was in Bristol, and the room was packed. I mean, it's probably, my guess would be about 40 people, maybe more than that. The speakers there were all really good, and the whole feel of the meeting was about activism and nationalism and where we go from here. Some of the other forum meetings have concentrated on historical presentations, which is all really good because we need to know our history. But this one at the weekend was all about activism, and it tied in a lot with what you've been doing over there in America at the moment. With your new alliance that you're forming, the Nationalist Front. It was talking about alliance between the different groups. It was just a really, really good day. The first speaker was Richard Edmonds, who's a longtime activist. About 3 or 4 decades he's been involved in activism. He was second in command in the British National Party, and he's now in the National Front. And what he was talking about was just what a momentous occasion the Brexit vote actually was. 17 million people voted for nationalism. That's what it was. They were voting to leave the EU, where we get told our laws dictated to by people that aren't elected by us, to leave them and to govern ourselves and to govern our own borders and to prevent the country from being invaded. So we must remind ourselves, whenever we get down, just remember, you know, we had that Brexit vote. 17 million people voted for nationalism. Over half of the country voted for nationalism. So he was saying, well, where do we go from here? Now that we've had this Brexit vote, what do we do? The BNP have pretty much fallen apart. UKIP, civic nationalists. And what he said was, what we need to be supporting now is the National Front. You know, 50 years they've been going next year, 50 years the National Front have been going. They started off with the people that started it up were top people involved in the military. A lot of aristocratic types were involved in forming the National Front. It's been really maligned by the media over the last decade or so. But really, they're the only party that have stuck by the 14 words all this time. You know, they are about the white race and saving the white race, basically, and ensuring that we have a future for our descendants. So he was trying to encourage people to join them, which, you know, I'd just like to say now to our British listeners that they should join the National Front, and I'd really like to see them taking off again. You know, that they've got a history, they've got some fantastic people involved, they've got Richard Edmonds, and their previous chairman who was in he had a car accident, but he seems to be getting better. And this year he gave a fantastic speech at their annual general meeting, which I recommend people listen to. And if you haven't heard part one of the Southwest Forum, we had that we played that for you yesterday, and that was published at Radio Erin yesterday. And part two is going to be on in a couple of hours time from this program, and it will also be available on the site there. But the National Front, their actual imagery that they use, I noticed you use for the Nationalist Front, Matt. What was the thinking behind that? Were you wanting to sort of show solidarity with the National Front in Britain?
Well, yes. And, you know, with the Traditionalist Worker Party, one of my big inspirations, of course, is learning from Europe and being able to adapt it in an American perspective. And with that comes, as we saw, the National Front, especially in the 1970s, 1980s, had a huge following of mobilizing white working class British folks about getting everyday dock workers, factory workers, farmers, everyday blue collar people that were abandoned by the political system, organizing and then mobilizing them, getting huge rallies, getting huge election results. And then, of course, being able to see for us that this message of nationalism, as you're talking about with Brexit, as we're talking about, as we've seen with the primaries with Donald Trump, and moving forward into our general election, that everyday white working and lower middle class folks agree with the principles of nationalism. They want advocates that are going to fight for them economically, socially, and racially, that want the 14 words. You know, we must secure the existence of our people in a future for white children. So for me, you know, we were, you know, trying to put together with the Nationalist Front, discussing ideas for imagery and things like that. And what could we have as a banner that if we are mobilizing the working class, if that's what this is, taking the white working class, the people that have been abandoned, have been spit on, have been actively attacked by the system that absolutely hates them, wants to replace them, wants to not just replace them quietly, but wants to actively grind them into the dirt, as we've seen with our trade policies, our immigration policies, the anti-white hatred in the media and in our universities, that we want to be able to have symbolism that speaks to us. You know, in the Anglosphere, we're all shared together. Even if you're an American who's ethnically German, ethnically Italian, or something like that, we, for the basis of our society, come from English common law. We speak English. We're part of the Anglosphere. So that's where I thought it was a very important thing to be able to stand in solidarity with our comrades. I know a lot of great comrades from the National Front in Britain that are out there every single day being active. And even when there's always these pop-up groups, as we've seen, like UKIP, it's just like, you know, my friends in the NPD in Germany, the Alternative for Deutschland popping up, that the NPD has been fighting for the best interests of the German people for decades, and they'll never waver from that. So you might have the system prop up these civic nationalist groups that might steal voters, might steal money and stuff like that from the true nationalists, but these civic nationalist groups will always fall apart because they're not built on the foundation of faith, family, and folk. They're not built on securing our existence and the existence for our children and our culture. So for me, that standing true on the principles, no matter how hard it can be sometimes, whatever temporary setbacks we might have, because of course, national sentiment is rising, the system wants to direct it into kosher-approved groups, but if we stand strong, then we have the ability to be able to win out. We need to stick by our principles. We need to never compromise. So for me, you know, as a member of the Anglosphere, that's where we looked for inspiration of what is a symbol that can be able to unite us with our comrades in Europe, especially those in Britain, of which we share this common heritage, this common legacy. Of course, our founding fathers, even, you know, when they were breaking away from Britain, talked. Well, they were free Englishmen. They always identified as being parts of the Anglosphere, and we need to be able to have these symbols that aren't factional. So here in the United States, we've got a lot of different factions, a lot of different groups, and I wanted to have something that was new and unique to us in America, but bonds us together with Europe, especially considering our main focus is galvanizing the white working class. So yeah, the National Front was a huge inspiration to me, especially their policies in the 70s and 80s that were so successful, and now they're reorganizing and marching forward again. So yeah, that's for our symbolism, the idea of bringing that together as a new, you know, new symbolism here in the United States, but linking us with a historical and current movement in Britain to be able to tie us together as nationalists, because what unites us as our blood, as we were talking about yesterday with Jason, when it comes to traditions and not having division on religion and things like that, Above all, we are Europeans. We are tied together, and those of us in the Anglosphere share, you know, we're all Europeans with all of our comrades in Europe and in Latin America, South Africa, but we have this special affinity, this special brotherly connection with one another, so I thought that was important to be able to show our unity to Britain.
Yeah, I really like that, the Anglo-speaking countries sticking up for one another and the nationalist groups sticking up for one another. I mean, Richard Edmonds was also talking about Donald Trump there. And the policies that he's putting forward. I think nationalism really does chime with the people, and this Brexit vote proved that. And the next speaker that was there was Julie Lake, and she was talking about these little groups that start up, and they've got half a dozen of them, and that's it, and all they've got is a website. And when it comes to voting, people are just always going to vote for the bigger party. So it pretty much end up being a waste of time. What they should really be doing is joining up with the National Front. What they should be doing in America is joining up with your alliance, Matt, so that you've got a larger group of people, a larger organisation that all comes under, you know, the one umbrella, which is sort of what the National Front are hoping to do. And the speaker after that was excellent. I'm sure you've heard of him, Alex Davies from National Front.
He gave a
fantastic speech, really, really good speech, one of the best ones this year. He was just talking about how the success of the Daily Stormer has shown that there's, you know, we really should not be compromising. We, you know, we should be telling the cold, hard truth. We should be bold with what we are saying, because that attracts the people to it. If you look at the viewing figures for the Daily Stormer, I mean, within the space of 2 years, it was getting more viewing figures than Stormfront, which was previously the biggest internet site, white nationalist internet site that there were. So you're saying that we've got to speak the truth in our message. And this separates us from these civic nationalist groups that you were just mentioning there, Matt, because there's no consistency to their message. You know, they say, well, we're against extremist Islam. Well, what is extremist Islam? And they say, well, oh, it's the people that want to behead people and all the rest of it. And you say, well, that's what they do in Saudi Arabia. You know, that's basic Islam. That's moderate Islam, is following the Sharia law. The Sharia law says that that's what they should be doing. So, you know, either you are against Muslims and you don't want them here, or you want the multicultural system. So there's no actual consistency to what the civic nationalists are saying, where it isn't based on race, where they think that so anybody that comes to the country and says that they'll go along with our laws, that's fine. Well, sooner or later, that means that they're going to be outbreeding us, because we've also got our low breeding rates, which is a serious problem. So he was saying all these ways that we can point this out to people, and surely these civic nationalists must think that logically, you know, that they really haven't got a very consistent position. I mean, what I'd really like to see is people from Britain First and from UKIP moving towards the National Front, and all the young people are helping out National Action, because National Action have been so successful in what they're actually doing. If you think back to 4 or 5 years ago, there was no young nationalists, there was no young nationalist movement. And National Action have now got various chapters all over the country, and you can look on their site and see everything that they're doing, which is also really encouraging for other people to see. But one final point I make before I hand it back over to you, Matt, was Alex was saying, look at how many people there are that are reading the Daily Stormer. And then why aren't they going on these demonstrations? Why weren't they all there at this Southwest Forum? It was packed. As I say, the room was packed. But, you know, it still would have been good if there'd been another 100 people there or so. If you think that there's at least 1 million viewers, I think there's 3 million visitors a month to the Daily Stormer, you know, a good 100,000 of them have got to be coming from Britain. So why isn't there 100,000 young Brits turning up at these demonstrations? They really need to be getting out there and putting their boots on the ground instead of just tapping away at the keyboard. You know, I know we do the radio show and we do stuff online, but that's to encourage people to go out and go to these things. I mean, I go to these things. Matt, you're outside all the time doing stuff and demonstrations. It's not just online. But that's what he was trying to encourage people to do, was get off the keyboards and get outside. I'll pass it back over to you now.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think you're 100% right. And that's where we, as nationalists that are on the front lines, you know, leaders of organizations, activists and organizations, what we need to be able to do is show if we can bring the established groups together, because you're 100% right when you mentioned, for instance, the groups that, you know, if it's smaller parties, then they want to be people will vote for the larger party. And essentially, we're dividing our efforts. You know, a house divided against itself cannot stand. I mean, we all know that saying, and it's 100% true politically. So what we need to be able to do, those of us who are already on the streets, already active, there are so many of us out there already. And here in the United States, for instance, I think distance is one of our biggest problems because, you know, to go from the East Coast to the West Coast, it's like trying to organize a nationalist movement between Portugal and like Hungary. It's a very wide distance, pardon me. But we need to be able to do it. And that's where having regionally based and locally based organizations is so important. But then coming together, and that's where the idea of the Nationalist Front is, you know, right now, we might not be able to have a unified party as we're building with the Trisha's Worker Party. But of course, we've got party members all over, but we're focusing on the Mid-Atlantic, Appalachia, the Upper South, and the Midwest, because those are the areas with the most amount of white working class people. Racial sentiment is a lot higher here than the rest of the country, and we're doing very well. But being able to build these alliances with groups all around the country where we can support one another and get out, we need that framework that when we stand together, if one group is holding an event, get your members to go, and then people will be encouraged by that. Public demonstrations are about encouraging our people, and then the people that believe what we believe want to get out there but don't see this framework. If we can be more unified, if we can be more successful on the streets, if we can gain more ground, that will take the people that are kind of sitting on the fence or sitting on the sidelines to push them into our camp, to encourage them to be more active, and then that turns into getting more people. That's why street demonstrations are so important. That's why doing public outreach is so important. That's why creating our own media is important and encouraging people and mobilizing them. But there's already a huge revolutionary vanguard, not only here in the United States, but in Britain and the rest of Europe, of young nationalists especially, that see where things are going. They don't like the direction it's going. They want to be able to fight for their future and their children's future. But public demonstrations, public meetings, going out and getting involved is so important because it has a multiplier effect that every guy that turns up might encourage two more guys to show up at the next event and so on and so forth. You know, you turn your local meetings, you might get a dozen guys in one local area, but then they'll all bring a friend. Then you've got two dozen guys and then you've got four dozen and it builds from there. And that's what we're doing. That's why activity is so important. The internet is great to connect us with one another, but it has to translate directly into action because action is then, you know, movements move. It's a statement that I always love. It's so true. We have to be dedicated to moving things forward. And that's got to be done because he who controls the streets controls politics. The left has understood this for the past 50, 60 years. It's up to us then to be able to retake the streets, to be able to retake our communities, to mobilize our people, and to be able to push things forward. But, I think it's really interesting to be able to hear, of course, there have been some issues like with the BNP, UKIP. I was just reading something a few days ago where there's a lot of fight between like a third of UKIP members that were polled want things to go more in a nationalist direction. A third want to keep things the same. And a third want to actually pivot towards the center and essentially become a center-left party. So what's your thoughts, Sven? Do you think UKIP is going to be able to hold together for more than the next few years? Because it seems very clear you've got a huge number of the people that want to be on our side, that are actual nationalists, that want to come to us, people that are comfortable with kind of civic nationalism, and those that want to sell out. It seems like that's a coalition that's not going to hold together, but it will open up possibly millions of Britons to come into our perspective, very much like in the United States, where the Republican Party, when no matter what happens in November, the elites are going to want to pivot towards more multiculturalism. They're going to want to talk about, family values across the Rio Grande, and Hispanics are natural conservatives, and there's a huge amount of white working and lower middle class voters that want true nationalism. They're tired of that, and they're civic nationalists that the foundation is eroding beneath them. So we've got a very similar situation here, but what do you think in terms of UKIP about this seemingly uneasy coalition and its future and what impact that might have on nationalist organizing?
Well, I'd like to see them do one thing or the other. I'd either like to see them pursuing a further towards the right, further towards nationalism, which I hope we would see if Paul Nuttall gets voted in, which would be a good thing. I'd like to see them speaking out against the Islamification of Britain, speaking out against all these refugees that are coming in, and advocating for repatriation, which is the most important thing, saying that they have to go back. You know, Britain is ours, the rest must go, as National Action say. But if they don't do that, then yes, I would like to see them go move right towards the centre and become leftists, so that lots of people leave UKIP and join the National Front and get the National Front going. Because we've got to have an ethnic nationalist party in Britain, a successful ethnic nationalist party. So whatever they do, I hope they don't just stagnate and stay the same as they are. I hope they either move towards the right or give up on it anyway. A lot of them have been moving back towards the Conservatives now that we've actually left the European Union. Because we've left the EU, or we've voted to do that anyway, that was their whole issue, really. So they really do need to work out what it is that they believe in. And of course, race is one thing that you can believe in that isn't going to change, that we need to support. To move on to the next speaker, and this is something that involves you, I think, Matt. This was by Max Musson from Western Spring, and his speech was all about how to build white communities, the actual practical ways of doing this, about once you move into an area and you start frequenting one particular butchers or grocers, and you start using them, and you build up a unity of shops that you use, and then you can talk to them about the issues that other grocers or butchers are facing with the various ethnic minorities that are moving in and taking over. And then you can enact a protectionist policy among the shops, and you can get the other white people that you know to frequent these shops as well. So you can form these sort of groups, almost like secret societies, like using the Freemasons techniques against them. So he was talking about these basic ways that you can move into an area and then ensure that it remains white, basically, because really you want to be doing this in areas that don't actually already have non-whites in them. It's ways to move to an area and keep it white. And I know that where you've moved to now, Matt, you're trying to build up a white community there. They even had that video piece on you the other day, which I must say did portray you in a very good light. I thought it certainly didn't portray you in a negative light. The one that also had Matt Parrott in it, and it was showing you doing your building work and at this new compound. And, you know, it just looked to me very good what you're actually doing there. And the film crew were certainly sympathetic to you, I thought. And the negative view that was put on there was nothing whatsoever to what you were talking about anyway. It was talking about stop and frisk. But this actually building white communities idea, that there's very little about the actual practical ways of doing this. So I think you might find Max Musson's speech interesting. As I say, that's going to be on later tonight. I don't know if you want to comment on white communities before I move on to Jez Turner's speech, which was the last one, Matt.
Oh, 100%. And it's such an important thing for us to be able to do, because our people need to be able to have a base of operations. You look at nationalist movements. For instance, again, the NPD in Germany is very strong in East Germany, and they've built up community service, helping needy Germans. They've built themselves in as parts of the community, so they reliably know they can count on the support of, you know, not a majority of the population yet is the key word, I think, but building up that base of support where the people know them, the people trust them, and then from there you expand out to be able to challenge elections, challenge the political system in different regions. So for us, the United States, as fragmented as we are, we need to start building bases of operation, where especially if you're a young nationalist, like what we have with our land here, we've got a lot of members that are students at local colleges that will come, and on the weekend we'll work together on the property, we'll do party activities, we'll fellowship with one another. That keeps that strong relationship, so you know you're not either isolated or having to go out to the bar or something like that with a bunch of college kids that care more about sports ball, you know, than they do about the best interests of their race. But it builds a strong cohesion amongst the activists. We're actually building towards something, and then that allows us to have that base of operations to be able to grow outward, because just being a part of the community, and that's our objective. Our objective isn't to take over the town in some sort of dramatic beer hall putsch or something like that. It's just be part of the community and show that nationalists are here, we live here, we have our families here, we work here, we're a part of the community, we're just like you are, and we're actually fighting for the things that the average white American thinks about and agrees with. So it allows us to be able to convert more people to a cause. It gives us that base of operations. It creates solidarity with one another. It really is just a win-win-win. We need to be able to have communities, and that needs to be one of our focus, because it stops us from being so isolated from one another. Because when you're isolated from one another, it's very easy to burn out. It's very easy to leave the movement. But what we need to be able to do is grow. And that's built on having homes that we're not isolated from the system. We need to be able to have homes for our people. So that's such an important thing. We're doing it here in the United States. It's great that you guys are doing it in Britain. And I'm really excited that's taking off. And this is similar to what Casa Pound is doing in Italy. And I know España 2000 and other nationalist groups in Spain are doing it. Golden Dawn does things like this. We need community building. It's a crucial foundation for our movement, and I'm just excited that we're all doing it kind of simultaneously.
I live in a passive white community. It is white, but it's passive. They're not nationalists. It's just the way things are. You just know that there's a bond between you. You know, not immediate family, but you know that there is a bond between you because you share that ethnicity. It's such an important thing. And just talking about history and heritage and patriotism, you know, that sparks a fire in people's hearts. They're interested. You know, they feel that we're all part of the same people together. You know, it's really encouraging. It was really good to hear these various ways that we can capitalize on that and encourage these white communities. And Jez Turner was the final speaker, and he normally introduces the speakers at all of these forums, but it's not so often that he actually gives a full speech himself. And his speech was on the people that are behind all of this, the ones that are behind the white genocide agenda, the ones that are pushing this. And of course, it all comes down to the Jews. I know people might say, well, we talk about the Jews too much. But whenever you look at who it is that's pushing for immigration and calling for more refugees, well, it's the Jews. The ones who are calling for these new hate crime laws, well, it's the Jews. The ones that are trying to prevent us from being able to criticize these government policies, well, it's the Jews. Look at the ones that are behind the banks, the ones that crash the economy, well, it's the Jews again. Look at the ones that are pushing the pornography, the interracial pornography, the promotion of homosexuality, homosexual marriage, gender transforming, and even pedophilia now. And again, it's the Jews. So we mustn't be afraid to point this out, and we must make sure that we have these facts behind us so that we can say, well, look, this guy is a Jew, this is his name, he is the one behind it. Now, you may think that the problem is an Islamic problem and it's Muslims that are flooding our countries, but the people that opened the floodgates to that were the Jews, and they have a past history of doing it right the way throughout Europe, you know, in Spain, Italy, all these other countries where they let the Muslims in and then worked with them to persecute the white Christian people. And they're still doing the same today, but they're actually in our governments doing this. You know, we really haven't changed that much since the Middle Ages. So it was really good to hear Jez talking about that and pushing this subject, because it is an important subject. And people say, well, you know, we don't want to sound like we're anti-Semitic, or some people say, oh, well, we don't want to sound like we're Nazis. But it's the truth, you know, it's the cold, hard truth, nothing but the truth. Taking me back to Alex Davies' speech, which is saying we shouldn't be afraid to point out the truth. You know, if we stand on the truth, then it doesn't matter what's done to us. We've already won. We've already won the argument. You know, we proved we won the argument by winning Brexit, by having the people that were advocating for Brexit advocating for all these nationalist issues. So we know that if you speak the truth, then we are going to win, and we have God on our side when we speak the truth. And speaking up against the Jewish involvement in this, I feel it's very important. It's something that you've never shied away from doing, Matt, is it?
Well, you can't. I mean, as I always like to say, you know, the Jewish problem, it's almost like, you know, we as nationalists are almost like a doctor. And if you're sick and you go to your doctor and you have cancer, you know, you have lung cancer, and the doctor says, oh, well, you have a cough, here's some cough medicine. Well, you're letting the cancer go. You're actually killing the person that you've sworn an oath to save, because you don't want to tell them they have cancer because it might make them uncomfortable. But you doing your duty as a doctor is to tell them what's wrong, so then you can work together to fix it. And calling out the Jews, identifying the specific Jews and what they're doing is so important. We need the facts, we need the figures, we need the faces, we need all of that together to be able to show people that this is the truth. And even if it makes some people uncomfortable, we have to do it, because all we're doing with civic nationalism, or if we're talking about the Islamic immigration or things like that, that's just talking about the cough you get from the lung cancer. You need to identify the cancer so you can remove the cancer, and then the body can return to being healthy. And that's the situation we're in, and that's why it's so important. Never shy away from the Jewish question. Never shy also away from calling out the Gentile collaborators, those who work with the Jews. You know, as Cornelio Cadriano always said, you know, if I had one bullet and there was a Jew and a traitor, the traitor would get it. And we need to remember to always call out those of our own people that have sold us out, that are traitors, through our peaceful, legal, political action. We need to call them out. But the Jews are the ones who are behind these policies. They always have been. They always will be. And the only way to solve this problem is to remove the problem once and for all. Just like getting that tumor out of the body that's racked with cancer. So, Sven, right before we sign off, give our listeners a final thought for the day.
Well, I think you're entirely correct there, Matt, to talk about removing the cause and not just the symptoms. And I think it's a very good analogy that you have there with a tumour and the body fighting against it. Because a tumour is, and cancer is basically the body acting in ways that it shouldn't really be acting, that it wouldn't be acting in if it hadn't been for some outside influence. And the outside influence is the Jews. And they're causing the body of our people, the nation of our people, to turn against one another and to do harmful things to one another. And it's been caused by this outside agent of influence, which is the Jew. And he does act like a parasite. Eustace Mullins is quite correct when he says that the Jew is like a biological parasite. So it's quite simple. What we need to do is inoculate ourselves against what the Jew encourages us to do. And finally, what we need to do is remove the Jew entirely. And that will solve us from having this problem ever again, I think.
I would 100% agree. That's a great sentiment to leave us off on. And remember, as we were talking about truth, the truth shall triumph in this struggle, as a great man once said. And it's so important. So comrades, get active, get encouraged, because victory is going to be ours. So have a great rest of your day. I'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the show. Thank you, Sven, for being here. Hail victory!
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.